When I asked Judy what she was doing now, her reply made Ezio chuckle. I can't believe you just said that. I'm working with you, of course. This was a typical Judy retort, where I was put firmly in my place. She then laughed and added that her work now is to help create this book as part of our soul partnership. Judy also confirmed that she is one of the spirits working on John Dingwall's team. Apparently the group comprises more than 90 spirits, so it is no wonder they are able to provide so much detail about life in their world. Judy said the same thing as John, that they wish to get as much information to me as possible before I am too old to write, or before I pass over. She hastily added that this will not happen for quite some time, which brought a smile to my lips. It also made me wonder, how much information is still forthcoming. Not to be put off, I persisted and asked her, surely you're not working with me all day, every day? So Judy, like any other busy woman, listed in detail her main activities in the afterlife. The book is her first priority, and she also played an important part inspiring me to write my previous book, Afterlife. Judy confirmed that this is actually part of the blueprint for both of us, created when we came together in her last life. We are now working jointly to get this information out to as many people as possible. Shortly after she returned to the afterlife, Judy realized that this was part of our destiny, and this explained why she pushed so hard for so many years to get me started on writing. I kept receiving messages from various mediums telling me it was about time I started writing a book. One message came from my friend Bob Murray, a medium who lives in Canada. However, I am a great believer in things happening when the time is right, so I don't feel too guilty about it. Judy started to talk about some of her other activities. I had earlier discovered through her contact via Valhood that she was working with children, but just as she was in life, Judy is now a very busy spirit in the afterlife. I remember her as being very independent in many ways, and she believed that people need to take responsibility for themselves and their actions. Judy admitted she now accepts that occasionally she lacked a little compassion because of this strong conviction. There were times when she saw that people needed help, but she stood back, thinking they needed to work hard to change their circumstances to solve their problems themselves. Some people did change, but a lot of others just made excuses not to do anything. This made Judy wonder whether she had been too hard on some people. Being a highly focused archetypal Scorpio in her last life, Judy wondered why, if she could take control of herself, other people couldn't do the same. I remembered when she firmly made up her mind to quit smoking after several token attempts, she just gave it up cold turkey then and there, and never smoked another cigarette. Unfortunately, it was too late to save her life. The issues around control are just one of the areas she has been working on in her ongoing group sessions in the afterlife. Judy admitted that when she passed, she was confronted by the issue of control and had to learn how to have more compassion. She referred to the kind of compassion shown to her by my father, Bill, as he helped her to cross over. That simple little act was enough to open her mind to how people need help to understand and come to terms with certain things. Judy mentioned that I, too, have a strong attitude about people taking responsibility for their actions. I realized when I heard this that Judy has definitely been working closely with me, as this has become one of my focuses in the last few years. People who prefer to pass the buck rather than face their responsibilities are very frustrating to me. One of Judy's other jobs in the afterlife is based around this issue of personal responsibility. She employs her newfound compassion working with new souls arriving in the afterlife, helping them to become more self-reliant in their next life, and not just depend on government handouts or on other people's generosity. Judy spoke of the concepts she has learned in the afterlife that can help people on Earth create more rewarding lives, by understanding that their circumstances, difficult and challenging as they may be, are an important part of their development. We can learn our greatest lessons in times of adversity. It is vital that people accept responsibility for their actions so that they can learn their lesson and move on. The other passions Judy explores in the afterlife revolve around communication. She is helping train certain negative spirits that have crossed over so that they will be able to work positively with their family and close friends back on Earth. An important part of this work is dealing with skepticism about life after death. She is working with former closed-minded skeptics, whom Judy described as not believing in the afterlife and the hierarchy of angels during their previous life. Eventually, after realizing that life is a continuing process, they will be sent back in spirit form to break down the barriers they helped erect when they were previously on Earth. This education program demonstrates how people in spirit can come back and help us, if we choose to take heed of their messages. Those skeptics who believe there is nothing to look forward to but blackness after they die do not realize that they create that very experience for themselves when they first leave the body. When they finally accept help from more advanced spirits, they discover how wrong they were, and the blackness around them fades away. The education process that Judy works with helps these skeptics realize the potential damage they have created in their last life, and, most important, trains them to do something about it. I was delighted to hear Judy say that she has enjoyed a lot of success in her project to remove this skepticism about the afterlife. I avoid cynics with closed minds as much as possible, because over the years I have seen what mischief they can create around vulnerable people. No amount of discussion or evidence will convince them to open their minds. Once Judy and her colleagues have worked with these reformed spirits, they are instructed to go back and give their loved ones a real sign that they are still around. Sometimes these signs can be conveyed by a message from a medium, but in many cases they occur as something mysterious or otherworldly to get the point across. This can be anything from a dream or a voice in the stillness of the night to a book falling off a shelf with an appropriate message, or even an appearance in spirit form. Some spirits are informed that they may also have to continue this work in their next life if they have caused widespread fear or ignorance. It is part of an ongoing process by the spirit world to remove the doubt from as many skeptical minds as possible. This will, of course, be to their ultimate benefit when these reformed spirits next return to the afterlife and are able to avoid another sojourn in the black closet they have created. A quirky thought crossed my mind, as there seems to be an upsurge in the number of mediums now, it would be fascinating to know how many of them were closed-minded skeptics in a past life. My guide provided this insight and confirmed that I, too, had been one in a past life. Another little piece of my karma exposed. Judy told Ezio, much to his amazement, that she had also been part of the group working with TJ, a young man in spirit with whom Ezio is in regular contact. TJ's fascinating story is an integral part of Ezio's book, which he wrote with his wife, Michelle, Postcards from the Other Side. Spirit truly works in mysterious ways. Judy then spoke about a former skeptic named George, who has now become her protege in the heaven world. George was sent back to respond to a call from his family to give them a sign that he was now happily living in the afterlife. George answered their request for survival evidence by making a pile of pots and pans fall off a rack on the wall. His family got the message. The remaining part of her work in the afterlife Judy dismissed as simply admin. In other words, all the work behind the scenes necessary to make these changes happen. Judy says she really enjoys this side of her work, especially when she sees the message get through to somebody who didn't believe that life continues after we leave our body. Acceptance of survival not only helps doubters on Earth but makes it easier on their loved ones in the afterlife. Judy still keeps an eye on her family from her previous life and, despite some emotional problems that occurred in her last couple of years, surrounds them with love from her place in the afterlife. Judy referred to a client who had ripped her off badly in a business deal, creating a financial hassle for her. She had to come to terms with it as part of her healing in the afterlife and was told to forgive and forget. At first she found it hard to forgive him, but was eventually able to put it all into context as a role that person played in her life's lessons. Being able to forgive and move on has made her advancement easier in the afterlife. Judy described this as the hurt of the action that leaves an imprint on the soul, and must be cleared. Describing the two of us as twin flames, Judy once again mentioned that our relationship on Earth was predestined, defining it as diverging, converging, and then diverging again. I can only suppose she was referring to our entire life story, as we both reincarnated just 3 years apart in the same city, coming together again only in the last 4 years of her life. Parting after such a short time together was very distressing for both of us, but Judy says that is what the pain of grief is all about. Grief takes us through emotions that we would not otherwise experience or even recognize. She explained how the emotions and pain that we suffer in grief will eventually go on to become part of our life review in spirit. She described it as a processed cleansing similar to the pre-operation procedure carried out in the hospital before we go into surgery. The life review process actually started for Judy when she was bedridden before crossing over, with a lot of hallucinations and visions. Some of these visions she remembers as cloudy and confused, but she later found their true meaning. This life review process continued for her after she went back to spirit. It became part of her healing process, which happened almost straight away with a light that penetrated inside her. Judy's story of her passing and crossing into the afterlife differed greatly from the experience I recalled from my previous life, and highlights the fact that everyone's transition experience is unique. Just as in life on Earth, no two stories are the same, supporting the concept, as above, so below. Part 5, More from the Afterlife Team. 45, Contact Deepens. Now that I knew a little more about the group that supported John, which was made up of more than 90 spirits, including Judy and my father, I was eager to re-establish contact with them after a few months' break. We changed our modus operandi slightly when Kelly decided to take John's advice from spirit and go into trance the evening following the group meditation sessions at the Australian Casa at his property, Eagle's Nest. These meditations are known as current, by which the participants are able to link and raise their energies to facilitate spiritual healing. This is done in concert with John of God's Casa in Brazil, where doctors in spirit come through to help thousands of people each week with healing. The residual energy from that day's current was able to help Kelly as he went into trance in an adjoining room of the Casa. When Kelly, in deep trance, allows his spirit to rest quietly in a corner, John's energy is able to enter his body and make use of its physical attributes. Kelly's voice changes and becomes that of his father. The vocal tones, pace, and phrasing are completely different from Kelly's. John's signature is his distinct chuckle when he has integrated with Kelly, and his voice, soft at first, soon becomes stronger as his spirit settles into his son's body. Even though I had been champing at the bit to re-establish contact with John, Telly's busy schedule had prevented this from happening for a few months. So by the time we connected again, I had a list of topics I wanted to discuss. John straight away spoke about my impatience, revealing that the times of our contact had been chosen for us in spirit, and not the other way around, as I had supposed. As John said, we like to think we have control of these things, but really there are greater forces organizing our connection. John also needed his team to be available for him to establish contact, providing in each session their energy as well as their combined wisdom and experience. He said that teams such as his can number up to 1,000 spirits, according to the situation at hand. When larger projects are being addressed, hundreds of thousands of spirits can be involved. He described these projects as perhaps helping mankind with some of the greater things, such as injustices, which need a lot more energy. So if John needs a backup team to be able to speak with us, albeit in trance, do other spirits need support when they communicate with loved ones on Earth through mediums or other means? According to John, it is never just one spirit or one person, otherwise the connection would not be strong enough to last. It is always a team effort. Even when people feel the energy of a spirit around them, it can be hundreds of people saying prayers, if you like, toward that connection. The mediums who tutored Anne and me at the Arthur Findlay College in the UK spoke of a control spirit that is always present, providing support as part of a contact, so we know that there are always at least two spirits working for each contact. John went on to say that not only does it take a lot of energy for spirits to communicate with us, but the conditions have to be right to make the appropriate connection. These situations are becoming more and more complex, what with the busy lifestyle of people on Earth in the 21st century, as well as interference from technology. This is where the power of intention comes into play. If people make an appointment to see a medium or put themselves into the right conditions for communication, spirits are able to recognize the opportunity and act on it. However, intention alone does not always guarantee clear and concise contact, because outside factors over which there is no control sometimes interfere, which can be disappointing for everybody concerned. Children can often see and communicate with spirits a lot easier than adults, but here, too, modern life is complicating matters. John was adamant that it's not like the 1950s, when children were told to go outside and play in the fresh air. Now they are more likely to stay indoors and sit with electronic devices. Young people's minds are also being clouded by more and more fear being programmed into them by society, creating a barrier to spiritual communication. John was referring to stories of violence reported every day by the news media, as well as what many people recognize as the overprotective strictures of an increasingly litigious society. In general, spirits are not just allowed to slip down to Earth to communicate with people however and whenever they feel like it. John maintains that God is the only one who does not need some kind of permission to communicate with people on Earth. Everyone else needs to get clearance from the appropriate source, usually guides or perhaps from one of the many committees that oversee this. There are rules in the spirit world that have to be observed by everyone, but there is always someone on hand to be of help when it's needed. There has to be an order for things to work, that's important, John said. It is also essential for contact to be made when the time is right for all concerned. John mentioned that he, in turn, was part of the support group for Judy when she communicated with me through As I Odo Angelis. Spirits are often asked to put their energy toward a communication without even knowing the other people involved. Their role is simply to concentrate on providing energy as part of a meditation to help that connection. They do not take part in, or are not aware of, any of the information being passed on, because it is private and none of their concern. John described this form of meditation as being very powerful and capable of being refined and turned into many things, such as a healing or even something like time travel. This is a concept that has always fascinated me, and I made a mental note to pursue the question of time travel in a future contact. The same situation applies at John of God's Center in Brazil when medium João allows spirit doctors to work through him while he is in trance. In each session, hundreds and hundreds of people meditate in current to create the energy for the spirit doctors to provide many forms of spiritual healing. The people meditating have no idea which one of the 33 doctors in spirit is on duty in that session, or what information or healing is being passed on. They are simply providing support energy. However, at the same time they themselves are also receiving some of the healing energy from spirit. In general, everyone in the afterlife and also on Earth has a cluster of spirits supporting and working with them, according to John, in order to better that person's life. Again, as above, so below. 46. Unconditional love and unresolved emotions. Life in the heaven world opens up so many exciting areas to explore each time we return. The power of thought creation, the idea of other worlds, future possibilities for our next incarnation, and the ability to learn and develop spiritually from our mistakes are just a few of the opportunities available. As I prepared for our next session with John and Team Spirit, the whole question of relationships came to mind. From the many readings I have given over the years, it is obvious that problems and emotions concerning relationships are things that affect most people. My theory is relationship issues are part of a generational karma, especially for those born in the last half of the 20th century, and I wondered if there were similar problems in the afterlife. How do spirits relate to each other? Is it all love and light? Is unconditional love a universal practice in the heaven world? Not a lot changes when you return to the spirit world, according to John. Humans like to think there is such a thing as unconditional love, but whether we like it or not, people put conditions around love. This is an area where spirits learn a lot of lessons, as it cuts through to the very heart of who we are. Unconditional love is one of the most powerful emotions we can pursue, and this can open up a lot of negativity in people on Earth. It means loving with no rules and expecting nothing in return, which is very difficult in such a material world. So when spirits return to the afterlife, they bring these unresolved emotions with them. Old enemies do not suddenly put their arms around each other in a loving hug. Divorced couples may still detest each other, and for a lot of people all is not instant bliss and harmony. This becomes part of the work they must do in the afterlife, to understand and release these negative emotions that are restricting their soul growth. While spirits are working through these issues and also preparing for the next life, new emotions may often arise. John said that he does not see all the spirits in his environment rolling around with a loving heart, or having love-ins. Spirits still retain their personality, but once they are able to work through their emotional problems, they can advance to higher planes. John explained that spirits from these higher levels are easily distinguishable because you can feel the intense love energy they project. You can have a spirit move past you, and the feeling of pure love emanating from them may bowl you over and just leave you stunned, with no words spoken. John recalls having experienced many higher spirits in his energy field, sometimes for only a fleeting moment, and said that he felt humbled by that experience. Like everyone else, he is still striving to be a better person in relationship to others. Important emotional issues that spirits work within their soul groups include guilt, egotism, and forgiveness. It is vital to understand and come to terms with the situations that caused such great disharmony in their recent life. Until all the reasons for conflict are analyzed and understood, spirits are unable to move on to the next stage of their development, whether it is in the afterlife or in their next incarnation. The other members of the group are also learning and advancing by association, in what is really a spiritual classroom. This sometimes means a spirit will find it important to get a message to someone on Earth, asking for their forgiveness. It is never too late to practice forgiveness, in either this world or the next. It works both ways. Psychologist Dr. Stephanie Sarkis writes, "Forgiving doesn't mean forgetting, nor does it mean that you've given the message that what someone did was okay. It just means that you've let go of the anger or guilt toward someone, or toward yourself. But that can be easier said than done. If forgiveness was easy, everyone would be doing it. 1. However, it came as a surprise for me to learn that nobody is actually forced to attend these group sessions to clear the past and move on. There are spirits who, according to John, live in almost a dark limbo and refuse to participate and learn their lessons. They then return to Earth in their next incarnation no further advanced than when they were last there, and have to experience the same negative conditions all over again. The concept of free will applies in the spirit world as well as on Earth. Many people find it hard to grasp the concept of a world of spirit." Kelly had been asked by a friend who was looking for a simple, basic explanation of the main difference between what he described as here and there. He wanted to know what he was going to be up for when he eventually leaves this world. John summed it up with his unique sense of humor, saying the first thing to tell this man is that in the afterlife he will save on food bills. On a more serious note, the main difference is that, overall, life in spirit is easier, because, for a start, there is no physical body, with its needs and ailments, to worry about, nor are there the issues surrounding money, which creates a lot of stress and illness. In short, there are none of the negative demands of everyday life on Earth. A simple explanation of the spirit world is not easy to come up with, but John, who by now was getting into journalist mode, expanded his definition of the afterlife as a place where we go to learn about ourselves, and also to rest in between lives. He went on to talk about the problem of the simplistic attitude that is fostered in so many people that after they die they're going to either somewhere good or somewhere bad. Deep down, The vast majority of people know they have done something in life to feel guilty or remorseful about. No matter who these people are, or what their standing in life, they will still wonder whether they're going to end up in the bad place. While Spirit tells us there is no such place as hell, there are areas of the afterlife that John described as an institution where certain spirits are sent to learn. To summarize, John suggested that Kelly tell his friend that what happens in the afterlife depends on what you do right now. This rang true for me, as I have been contacted by many people who have read Afterlife to say that the information in the book has had a big influence on the way they decide to live their life now, and they have resolved to make the necessary changes to be better people. As usual, John had the final word on the subject. If you knew you were going to live somewhere else, and your current life would be looked at under a microscope, with your actions determining the kind of life you will have, wouldn't you want to take a good, hard look at yourself? 47. Genetic modification concerns. The question of genetic modification is ringing alarm bells for many people all over the world. Also known as genetic engineering, the techniques have been applied in numerous fields, including research, agriculture, industrial biotechnology, and medicine. Just before connecting with John and his group for another session, a newspaper story caught my attention. Scientists are experimenting with the DNA from three different parents to produce a child who will be potentially free from certain health problems. My intuitive alarm system went into hyperdrive. Genetically modified food crops and cloning are already very controversial subjects on Earth. But what do they think in the afterlife? I wasn't surprised to learn that spirits in the afterlife share our concern for the future of life on Earth. John's group's reaction was immediate, describing the whole GM movement as one of the scariest topics of conversation in the spirit world. There is apparently huge concern in the afterlife that humans are advancing too quickly in this area of scientific modification for both food and the human condition. They're advancing faster than they really have the knowledge for creating small breakthroughs, and instead of consolidating this knowledge over many years, they are giving into the desire for instant gratification. The testing that does happen is far too minor for the end result to be completely positive. The feeling in the spirit world is that the altering of human DNA has dire consequences for the future. John says it is being created by scientists and drug companies who are after money and power. Obviously, scientific research is essential for improving our lives, otherwise such things as antibiotics, anesthetics, and many other medical breakthroughs would never have occurred, but in spirit they believe that this time we are going too far. People on Earth are busily striving for perfection in their lives, but this is not always what is really needed. These ambitions may also affect the flow of karma, because some people need to have a life in which they can surmount what may be regarded as impossible challenges. For example, this may be the case for a family whose karmic lessons involve looking after a child with a dysfunctional body. It would also apply to a family who wanted a child, a boy, for example, and manipulated the DNA accordingly. If the child had been intended to be a girl for her own soul experience, the modification could cause grave problems as the child grew up. John summed it up succinctly: just because people want something, doesn't mean that it is the best thing for them. Eliminating one potential problem could well introduce unforeseen reactions. There could be mutant strains of conditions that emerge, perhaps in the area of the brain that we don't know about, John said. This interference could have potentially explosive consequences in later life. It can also affect generations yet to be born. The lessons that were supposed to be learned will not happen, or they will come in an entirely different and unpredictable form. It could also mean that the people involved may have to come back for another life to face the lessons they avoided. We do know that playing God when you are not God can be a bad thing, John said. It is hard for us to know just how far we can take these experiments without stepping over the line. When I questioned whether this experimentation was part of the cause for the downfall of the ancient civilization of Atlantis, I was told there was nothing new about this kind of manipulation, which has happened many times in the past in several cultures. On the question of genetically modifying food, John's group warned that there are dire consequences that may arise by putting a rogue seed out there that could have the capability of wiping out a whole world of grain if we are not careful.